To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 43. I'm going to take you through the Declaration of Independence. I want to talk about the history of the Declaration, what the founders had to go through, and what an unbelievable document I think you'll see if you read it, if you read this document written by Thomas Jefferson, probably one of the best literary pieces out there today, if you look at, compare that to Shakespeare. I mean, this guy had a gift with the pen. He was just an amazing writer, amongst many other things. But I want to talk about the Declaration, kind of educate you as to really what it is, why it was written, and then tie it into the Constitution. So when we get into episode 44, I'm going to bridge this right into the Constitution. That's what that will be about. And show you the link and the tie between the Declaration and the Constitution. They do not stand alone. They are not independent documents, if you want to think about it that way. They are linked. And we need to understand that link, especially as it relates to the foundation and the biblical references in the Declaration that don't show up in the Constitution, but you'll see that the foundation of the Constitution was written on Christian principles. So we'll talk more about that when we get to episode 44. So let me take you through the Declaration of Independence and talk about what it is and also, you know, what this document is really all about. So this document, of course, I think we probably all know, was written on July 4th, 1776. And when you look at this document, and by the way, it wasn't all signed on that date. I think it didn't get totally signed until a little bit after that. But anyway, this is the official date where we declared our independence. 13 American colonies declaring our independence from England, from British rule. Thomas Jefferson wrote it. There were some minor edits with others like Adams and Roger Sherman from Connecticut. He was the guy that signed all four documents, the only one that signed all four major documents of our founding. Franklin was involved in this, and a couple others made minor edits to this, but the primary document was written by Thomas Jefferson. Okay. And it was adopted by the Second Continental Congress, and it had four basic ideas baked into the Declaration. One, all men are created equal by God. Two, all men have inalienable rights. Now, you might see the word unalienable. They're interchangeable. They mean the same thing. But the inalienable rights that come from God and our natural rights are the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to pursue happiness. Not a right for equal outcome. We'll talk more about that later. The main role of government is to protect these rights. These rights must be protected by the government. And if people feel that their rights are being constantly violated by the government, they have a right to revolt. And this was baked in to the Declaration. Okay. And I think, as you'll see, people at that time did think their rights were being violated by the British rule. By the way, not everybody was on the same page. Not everybody thought that we should have broken from British rule. So it wasn't where everybody held hands and saying kumbaya and everybody thought that this was all the right things. Matter of fact, even families were split. Benjamin Franklin and his son were split on this issue. Franklin's son was beholden to the king. And of course, Franklin was one of our founders who was not. So even within families, it broke up families. It was a tough time. You think we have political strife today. there's a lot on the line on this particular issue and breaking out from the rule of England, a lot more than what we're seeing today, where we think the issues of today are the most pressing that we've ever had in our nation. So just keep in mind that not everybody was on the same page. Why was it written? Well, let's go back to 1765, about 10 years earlier, the Stamp Act. Okay, the Stamp Act was a very unpopular British tax with stiff opposition from the colonies. Every piece of paper had to be taxed. Think about that. Newspapers, the letter you would write to your friend, a book, every single paper was subject to the Stamp Act. Okay, it was eventually repealed, but it really set the tone for rule. Now, we were very, as a country, very patient over the course of 10 years. And remember, the Declaration was written in, and we declared our independence on July 4th, 1776. The Stamp Act was back in 1765. So we were very patient, and we continued to petition the King of England, and he ignored our concerns. Constantly ignored. As a matter of fact, he doubled down and kept infringing on the rights of the colonists. Okay. So King George III refused to listen to the concerns. All right. He doubled down on tyrannical laws on the colonies. And this eventually led to the Revolutionary War, with the first shots fired at Lexington and Concord, and many lives were lost at the Battle of Bunker Hill. So if you ever get to go to Massachusetts and visit these sites, they're pretty neat sites to go see. Really, it's kind of where it all started when you get right down to it. So let's just talk about how the Declaration was structured. Then we'll get into the 27 complaints that we had against the King of England and the British rule. The preamble. We hold these truths to be self-evident. I mean, just think about how that's written. That's such beautiful language, right? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the preamble to the Constitution. The next section shows 27 complaints or grievances against King George III, and he's called out specifically in the Declaration, okay? The Constitution, as you'll see in episode 44, was drafted to assure that the American citizens were protected from these particular grievances, and I'll get into a little bit of those in a minute. And then the resolution basically says, hey, look, we're breaking from you, man. We're going to be our own country. We're not part of you anymore. And we are no longer under British rule. So the resolution declared our independence. Let's talk about some of the 27 grievances. This is not all of them, okay? But some of the 27 grievances were colonial self-rule. The king continually appointed royal governors without any vote, without any, and withheld legislation that they didn't agree with. So we had no choice. These governors kind of ruled the roost. Taxes without representation. Trade. The king cut off trade with other parts of the world based on the colonies. They couldn't do commerce internationally. There was no trial by jury. They deprived the colonists of the benefits of trial by jury. Legislatures. The king suspended colonial legislatures. All right. He declared himself the sole legislator of the colonists. Matter of fact, even bypassed his own parliament. And he declared himself the sole legislator. How would you like if that happened? Standing armies. The king maintained a standing army even in the time of peace. And the quartering of troops. You'll see one of the amendments talk about not allowing British troops or any troops to be able to take refuge in your own home. I mean, this is what would happen. Troops would show up to a home in the colonies and say, hey, by the way, we're staying here, right? Feed us. Where are we going to sleep? Okay. Against their will, right? Martial law was imposed by the king. And there's a lot of theft and a lot of destruction of property by the British troops on the colonists. All right. And some very treacherous behavior towards the colonists if they didn't fall in line. Now, there was a book called Common Sense. I would highly recommend you buy this book on Amazon. I think it's only, I don't know, $5 or $10 by Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine wrote this book called Common Sense. And I think right now we're probably in the right time frame to start a book called Common Sense 2, which I will be working on once I find time from all my other endeavors. But this was addressed to the inhabitants of America. And of this, Thomas Paine talked about the independence from England and the creation of a democratic republic, not a democracy. And that is a key element of our Constitution, that we are a representative republic. And the idea came from Thomas Paine. And the founders, you know, took this book called Common Sense and actually, you know, took it into the framework of the Constitution, a very important document that had a lot of influence on the founders and on the ultimate, you know, U.S. Constitution. Now, a lot of people say, hey, look, there's a separation of church and state. And if you go back in one of the previous episodes, I think it's episode 41, I talked in depth about how the separation of church and state was really a sham by a very racist judge, Hugo Black, back in the 40s, where he used a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Baptist of Danbury, Connecticut, where Connecticut did not have a First Amendment protection of religion. And so they were worried. Well, the Supremacy Clause says, hey, the First Amendment's the law of the land. You're covered. Regardless of what Connecticut's Constitution says, you're covered. And I go into depth in that, okay? So this whole notion of separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. However, so people say, well, you know, God's not mentioned in the Constitution at all. That's exactly right. And the reason for that is the founders wanted to make sure that the government was accountable to the people, okay? People being accountable to God, but the people owned the government, not the other way around, all right? And so if you think about the whole movement towards separation of our government and taking out the Ten Commandments in courtrooms and tearing down crosses and no prayers in classrooms, that is absolutely not in the spirit of what the founders said. And I talk more in detail on episode 41. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode, I'd suggest you do that, okay? But there is a direct tie between Christianity and God with our founding documents. Now, in the Declaration, God is mentioned 4 times. In 3 of those times, they talk about the 3 branches of government, which is one of the most brilliant things that they baked into the Constitution: the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branch of government. Okay. And there's checks and balances between all 3 of those. Again, I'll get into that more in episode 44 when we talk about the Constitution. But let's talk about the first reference to God. And this all has to be associated with the legislative branch of government. And I'll just, you know, pull out some of the quotes here on the Declaration. To assure among the powers of the earth the separation in an equal station to which the laws of nature's God entitle them. Okay, so there's your legislative branch. I'm going to skip down to the judicial branch. We therefore, the representative of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world. Again, they're talking about God, okay? And the executive branch, and for the support of this declaration with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, that's God, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. So right there, you've got the three branches outlined in the Declaration. And one other reference to God, which has to do with our rights. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Okay, so there you have it right there in a nutshell. The three branches of government and the reference to our rights coming from God. They're natural rights. Rights do not come from the government. So let's for a minute talk about what happened to the signers of the Declaration, okay? Something to understand, these people signed a death warrant. They actually signed a death warrant when they signed the Declaration of Independence. Five of the signers were captured and tortured to death by the British. Nine signers fought in the Revolutionary War and died of wounds and hardships from the war. A third of the signers had their homes destroyed. Many lost their fortunes and died impoverished. And many of the families were imprisoned and abused by the British. The signers knew they'd be charged with treason by the British with the penalty of death. And by the way, when I say penalty of death, it's not until they were duly tortured. The British were great torturers, okay? And then probably in front of their families, and probably their families would be tortured in front of them before they were hung for treason. They were ruthless, okay? So let's just remember what, I'm going to repeat this again. On the Declaration, it said, for the support of this Declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. They signed a death warrant. So anybody say, oh, well, you know, the founding fathers were slave owners, they were old guys, they were cowards, and they were rich white men and all this. Yeah? How many people today would sign this thing? Think about that, knowing that the probability of this really being pulled off was low, and that the probability was very high that they would be captured, tortured, and hung. So Franklin had a quote. He said, we must hang together, or assuredly we shall hang separately. Okay, he said that on July 4th, 1776. And at the time, he was 70 years old. He was the oldest guy. All right, everybody else was a lot younger. So, who were the signers? There were 56 signers, and they were primarily people of means. And kind of like President Trump, they didn't have to do this. They had, their life was set. They had their fortunes. They had their great lives. They had their careers. Some were lawyers. Their 24 were lawyers or jurors. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers. They kind of had their lives pretty well organized. Okay. They could have lived out in comfort, but they decided to fight for our freedom. How many today would have done this? Right. And this is why I have all the respect for President Trump, because he didn't have to do this. He was a multi-billionaire. He had his life. He had Mar-a-Lago. He had all his real estate investments. And he didn't have to stick his neck out and risk his neck, literally risk his neck, to help our country. Okay. Two of the signers of the 56 became president of the United States. John Adams became the second president, and then Thomas Jefferson became the third. And these two guys were at odds. Adams was a big government guy, and Jefferson was a limited government guy who wanted to give more control to the states. Okay, so again, even at the time of the signing, these signers were not all in concert with their view on what the government should be. Okay, so Adams and Jefferson were at odds pretty much all their lives after the Declaration was signed. And they both died on the same day. They both died on July 4th, 50 years to the day after the Declaration was signed in 1826. Incredible. Okay, they did reconcile, I understand, towards the end of their life. But they were at odds in terms of what this government needed to look like. And thank God Jefferson won. We've strayed away from that. And I have several podcast episodes on how we strayed away from the originality of our founding and our Constitution. But suffice it to say, we started off on the right foot, thanks to guys like Jefferson and Madison. Okay. People like Hamilton and Adams wanted bigger governments and wanted a little bit more control, a lot more control. Thank God they didn't get their way, at least back then. Okay. So I hear this a lot. I got into this argument with a liberal college student a while back. The signers were old white men who owned slaves. Come on. And that document is now, defunct. It's an old document. My first question was, well, what about the Bible? That's an older document, I think, by a couple thousand years. Okay. Number one. Number two is, since you just got through telling me that there are several genders today, how do you know these guys were men? How do you know? Matter of fact, how do you know they even identified as white? I mean, you have politicians today saying they're American Indian when they're not, saying they're African American when they're not. How do you know they were white? How do you know they were old even, and that they were men? God, they wore wigs. They powdered their wigs. So how do you know? Okay. It's easy to throw the crap back at them, I guess. But then this whole business about owning slaves. Okay. They knew slavery was wrong. Matter of fact, Ben Franklin was an abolitionist. He fought for the rights of black slaves. A lot of people don't know that. Thomas Jefferson, when he was in the legislature, wrote a law to free slaves, and it was knocked down overnight. Okay. A lot of people don't know that. But then they say, well, they still own slaves. So Mark, they're hypocrites. Oh, really? What would happen if they released their slaves? Those slaves would have been captured by a slave master. Matter of fact, even in the North, there were people that were looking to capture slaves and make money off of it by bringing them down to a cotton plantation to some tyrannical slave owner who would abuse the hell out of them, A, for escaping, and then, enduring the wrath of being a slave owner under somebody like that. In general, these guys treated their slaves pretty well, okay? And they knew that if they let their slaves free, it would have been worse for them than had they kept them. That's one thing you got to keep in mind. Secondly, they knew also that this was such a hot topic, they never would have formed a country if they tried to free the slaves as part of this Constitution. Okay. That was a lot. There was a lot of wisdom in that decision. They put it off. And as you know, in the mid-1800s, we had a civil war over this whole issue, okay? We never would have had a country if they tried to attack the slavery issue in 1776, okay? Matter of fact, we would have had not only the British to fight, but we would have had each other to fight in this regard, all right? Now, what about their age? The average age was 44. And Franklin brought that up because he was the oldest. He was 70, all right? The youngest, Edward Rutledge, at age 26. Jefferson was 33. James Monroe was 18. Hamilton was only 21. James Madison, who wrote the Constitution, was 25. Adams was 33. Washington, a little bit older, he was 44. And Paul Revere is 40. So they weren't old men. They weren't old men. And these guys put their ass on the line, and they also put their fortunes and their whole families on the line to create our country. And it really irritates me when I hear that, the Constitution is defunct. No, it's not. It's the law. Our Constitution is not a suggestion. It's the law of the land. Okay. And it really gets me when I hear them say about old white men, they were slave owners. and try to discredit the whole Constitution. Well, on some of my other episodes, you'll find that the progressive movement starting with Woodrow Wilson, who's the father of the progressive movement, had a disdain for the Constitution. He actually said that the checks and balances, which we'll talk about in episode 44, the checks and balances, which I think is the most genius part of the Constitution, is just a theory, he said. See, the Constitution got in their way. And they'll only pull out the Constitution when it's convenient. But the Constitution, when it comes to a progressive, it gets in their way. And anybody who tells you they're a progressive, basically, they're pretty much saying they're a Marxist. Okay? They're anti-Constitution is really what they're saying. It sounds neat, though, to be a progressive, right? Hey, I'm state of the art. My thinking is so much higher than your thinking, because I'm a progressive. I'm above the fray, right? I see things so differently, and I'm such an intellectual and so virtuous that, you know, my progressiveness is going to take us forward. No, it's not. It's going to actually kill millions of people and take us back into a pit. Okay. Anyway, a little bit more about, you know, the signers. Who were they? Old white men who owned slaves? No, that wasn't the case at all. You probably know that Sally Hemings was one of Thomas Jefferson's slaves, and I think he had an affair and children by her after his wife died. Okay. He was in love with her. And the funny part about it was Sally Hemings was the stepsister of Thomas Jefferson's wife. All right. Thomas Jefferson's wife's father was her father. Okay. And he sired many children out of his slaves. And she came in working for Jefferson when she was 9 years old. And as she grew up and his wife passed away, he had a love affair with her. And word has it that he had some children by her, and he was in love with her and all that. And kind of interesting how that might happen, right? Anyway, Sally Hemings, look her up. Kind of a neat story. Another criticism I get from the uninitiated is, how come the founders said all men are created equal? What about women? Jefferson used the term all men are created equal to mean all of humanity. He didn't mean just biological males, which today, of course, biological males is a big question mark. Or some of the liberals, they get confused. But but what about women? Yeah, it covered women, guys. When Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon, he said, it's one giant step for man, for a man, actually, is what he said. One giant step for all mankind. Okay, all mankind. He didn't mean just man. He meant all mankind. Okay, so get over your pettiness on the words that we used back in the 18th century. Okay, words have changed. Meanings have changed. That's why we have the 1828 dictionary written by Noah Webster, because the words in that book are actually the words that are memorialized in our founding documents. Webster wrote that dictionary because he knew words would change, meanings would change, and that's why he wrote, the primary reason why he wrote that dictionary. It's a fantastic document. I can't believe how many words are in it, and I can't believe he did this without the internet. Maybe that's a good thing. Okay, but it's an incredible document. And by the way, I'm not talking about the Merriam-Webster dictionary. That's a BS dictionary with all kinds of woke crap in it. You got to get the 1828 Webster dictionary. Okay, 1828. It's online. It's on Amazon. I got the nice hardcover. Kind of funny. I asked for a dictionary for Christmas. People say, "Hey, Mark, what Diane get you for Christmas?" And she got me a dictionary. And they look at me like, what are you, some kind of nerd? But I got a nice hard-covered Webster's 1828 dictionary that I reference all the time. What do they mean by bare arms? Look up bare. You'll find out what that means. It means handheld. What does war really mean? Let's go back and really understand what war means. All kinds of words that you look up in that dictionary to understand the meaning at the time that the Constitution was written. Okay, So sometimes when you read the Constitution, you just can't always, or the Declaration for that matter, the words in it may not have the same meaning today as they did back then. Okay, that's why it's important to understand, and that's why I got that document. You can get it in SoftCover too. It's a lot cheaper, but I would highly recommend, if you're interested in any of this, that you do, in fact, pick up that dictionary as well. Okay? So the phrase, you know, all men were created equal, was tied back to the philosophy of the European Enlightenment, all right? And the brilliance of how they tied this in was, to me, I just look at all of these founders, that they were able to come together and do what they did. It's a once in a lifetime type thing. I don't know where we'd be today without them and without the work that they have done. Okay. So I'll end it with this. So first, I want you to remember in summary here that the actual Constitution is derived from so much of this Declaration. The Declaration of Independence is a key input into the Constitution. Okay. So they go hand in hand. They're not really separate when you think about it in that fashion, all right? And the grievances that were in the Declaration, there are 27 grievances against King George III, found its way into our Constitution. And as you'll find out about rights later, I'm going to talk more about rights in episode 44. These aren't the only rights that we have, okay? But they are the ones that mattered when they put the Constitution together, all right? So I'm going to leave you with this last slide, if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, okay? It's your duty to stay informed. This is why I'm doing this podcast, okay? To get people to really understand the framework of our country, and why we need to always go back to it when we start seeing what's going on today in the political world. Because I could probably argue that every single day our Constitution gets violated, all right? But Jefferson said this, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. And I'm going to argue today that we are not well-informed. We do not know our founding. We don't know the history. We don't know the brilliance of these founding documents and how our country was put together. We don't call it the unique experiment for a reason. It's an experiment because there's never been a constitution in the history of mankind written like this one, and one that's never lasted so long. Okay, so we're going on 250 years of the founding of our country next year. Okay, 2026. And the more you get into it and the more you listen to some of my episodes, you're going to find out that how brilliant the founders were to be able to put together what they did, and also to pull it off, and also to have the guts to put their literally their lives on the line, along with their families, to found our country. So it's our duty to stay informed. We are not doing a good job in our school systems on this. We're teaching the wrong version of history. Glastonbury, Connecticut, where my kids went to school and where I lived a good part of our lives, my wife and I, don't even teach the fact that we're a republic in their civics class. They teach that we're a democracy. And we do have an episode on that that talks about the difference. And I refer to a republic versus a democracy, which is mob rule. Okay. That is one of the key elements of the founding of our country. And we've got history professors arguing with me that a democracy and a republic are the same thing. Okay. So I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. We're not only misinformed, who are misinforming our students when we do take the time to teach them about our country. Okay. So I will leave you with that. A well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. And with the internet today, and the we probably have the most information available to us today than that at any time in the history of mankind. But I could probably make the argument we're the most misinformed as well, right alongside of that. Okay. So it's your duty to stay informed. And if you listen to this podcast episode and some of the other episodes, that's a really good start to listen to this and get a good understanding of what this is all about. Okay, so we're going to get into episode 44 next, the Constitution, and you'll see the tie of the Declaration and what we just talked about with the U.S. Constitution. Okay, until next time, Mark DeLuzio, this was episode 43, the Declaration of Independence and its tie to the U.S. Constitution. Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.